The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 232, entitled How to Use the Power of Your Mind to Heal Yourself from Virtually Any Condition, I chat with Dr. Dawson Church. Dr. Dawson Church is an integrative healthcare researcher, the pioneer behind EFT Universe, and the best-selling author of The Genie in Your Genes and his latest book, Mind to Matter. In today's episode, Dr. Dawson talks about the incredible power of your mind and how science is just now uncovering the true potential of what it can really do. He shares the latest groundbreaking research into epigenetics, meditation, EFT, and the miraculous healing of all types of sickness, disease, illness, syndromes, and much more. If you're wondering how to use your mind to take control of your health and life, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. This episode is sponsored by my friends over at Vincero Watches. Typically, finding a watch that is high quality, good looking, and precise costs a pretty penny. But Vincero Watches is here to change that. Vincero Watches creates exceptionally crafted watches, and they do it without breaking the bank. You're not going to find a better made watch for this good of a price anywhere else. There is a reason Vincero has over 16,000 five-star reviews, because their bold timepieces masterfully blend form and function into one affordable timepiece. Whether you're preparing for a first date or to crush a business meeting, a classic wrist watch is something every man needs. There's always going to be an occasion where you want to really impress and your Apple Watch just won't cut it. Vincero timepieces are showstoppers. I'm telling you, you're going to get complimented every single time you wear it. I recently got my own Vincero watch and I'm absolutely blown away with how incredibly cool, high quality, and beautiful this watch looks. I've never owned a watch that's looked as fresh as my Vincero timepiece. I honestly am in love with it. And it's truly a head turner. I've gotten so many compliments and people ask me where I got it. I'm telling you, you are going to absolutely love your Vincero watch too. And here's the best part, guys. For a limited time, Vincero is hooking up my Elite Man listeners. Vincero is offering 15% off your entire order with the coupon code ELITE. Just head on over to VinceroWatches.com and use the coupon code ELITE to get 15% off. That's VinceroWatches.com and the coupon code ELITE. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Dr. Dawson Church from MindToMatter.com. Dawson, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Justin, great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I really I'm excited for today's episode. As I mentioned to you a couple moments ago, that the topic we'll be discussing, or the topics we'll be discussing today, are actually some of the most interesting and fascinating ones that I've been digging into over the past few months. And that is of the subconscious mind, of epigenetics, of the power of the mind itself and what it can really do. For the listeners who may not be as familiar with you, Dawson, can you just take a minute or two and just describe exactly what it is you're doing right now?
Sure. Well, my main focus now is writing and research. I have been involved in over 100 clinical trials of various kinds, and it's in some capacity or another. I've been the main investigator in many of them. And right now, my mission is to get the implications of this work out into the world. As we're studying things like energy therapies, like meditation, like acupressure, we're finding that they produce enormous health effects, just like covers on the show. But the magnitude of the effects they produce is enormous. And so they produce such large effects on both health and longevity that I feel passionately committed to sharing this with as many people as possible and encouraging them to take practical action to actually apply these in their lives. So it's research and it's writing.
Cool. And what is the doctor? How did you get that? What is that, the field of that?
It's an integrative healthcare, because my real focus is on using the best variety of therapies available for your condition. And so if you are dealing with a symptom, if you have pain, if you have physical limitation, if you're diagnosed with a disease, you want to make sure you're getting the best of all possible treatments. And many people go straight to the hospital, straight to the doctor, and they bypass all of the available treatments. But what research is showing is that natural cures, natural treatments, alternative medicine has an enormous amount to offer. Not that you'll never need the doctor in the hospital, you do for some conditions, but certainly as a supplement to regular medical care. And often many of the incurable conditions that conventional care does a poor job with can be treated with alternative medicine. So I really focus on intelligently using the full range of healing tools available to us.
I'm the same way too, and I've been this way probably for over a decade now. And it all, for me anyways, it stemmed from overcoming some conditions just naturally, like an alternative approach to what doctors and, you know, other therapists I went to said and what most people would think. For instance, I had a really bad tendonitis problem to the point where like lifting up a gallon of milk would cause excruciating pain in the tennis backside of my elbow. And, you know, I overcame that naturally by doing some specific exercises and taking some supplements. I also had really bad depression and anxiety. So I've had a number of things over the years where I've turned to alternative approaches. And that's really what opened up my eyes to whole, really, to be honest, the whole self-help world at large. Was there something for you, Dawson, over the course of your life, or maybe a few things that really put you onto this type of learning and training where you can heal yourself and others by doing unconventional things?
I think many people go into psychology or healing, as I did, because they want to fix themselves. And a lot of people who go to mental health want to fix themselves. A lot of people who become therapists or coaches are wrestling with their own issues. And as a child, I looked back and I was never diagnosed with anything, but I realized now I was severely depressed. I was very anxious. I had PTSD at an early age. And so I went to go figure out how to deal with this. When I was 15 years old, I went to go live in a spiritual community, an ashram, and I spent years there in spiritual practice, and I learned meditation, learned energy healing, and I was really powerfully affected by learning those techniques. And so it was one pivotal moment in my life. I write about this in some of my books. Was I was 15 years old, Justin, and I was walking past a full-length mirror in a hotel. And my family was really poor. There's a lot of really weird stuff going on there. We were rarely in places of affluence, but I was in this hotel with them. I walked past this full-length mirror, and at the age of 15, I remember looking at my own face and thinking to myself, wow, that is the saddest face I've ever seen. I realized I just had a big problem. I was just a desperately unhappy human being. And it's so funny now because, like, my laugh has gone viral. People use it as ringtones on their phones. And I'm just known for being, like, one of the happiest guys in the world. But back then, I was in the midst of just this daily despair. And that lasted for probably, it took about 30 years for me to have enough therapy and personal growth to get out of it. But then when I began to meditate every day, I found that my whole life turned around. Then I learned EFT tapping, acupressure, another wonderful brief technique for releasing stress. And between those tools, I made a rapid shift in money, in career, in relationships, in health, in spirituality. Everything just changed for me very, very quickly after being pretty static for many, many, many years. So it's experiencing it. And then what really has changed my life is research, because I love science. And what science does is it quantifies things. So you tell me that you feel better after meditation. I want to know how much better. I mean, I want to know down to the decimal point. I want to know what's happening with the serotonin and dopamine and the acetylcholine and the anandamide in your brain. So a lot of my work is measuring things like gene expression and hormones, enzymes, and really looking deep into the way these states we describe as subjective experiences can be measured as objective biological ones. So that's really my passion. And I love being able to quantify and have a number on those positive things, so I can put them side by side against other therapies and say, hey, this on average does this for patients.
Yeah, and to be honest, that is some of the most fascinating stuff for me too, is actually seeing in actual studies, in research, in quantifiable numbers, what is really happening inside the body, inside the brain, physiologically, all these things that you talk about, you know, serotonin, dopamine, adrenaline, cortisol, all these like chemicals and neurotransmitters, what is actually really happening? Because it's one thing, like you said, to say, oh, I feel better after meditating, or I feel better after doing EFT or tapping or acupressure. But it's another thing entirely. And guys like, too, like Wim Hof, like we talked about earlier before the call, guys like that as well are actually showing these incredible physiological changes, for not for the first time ever, but really, I think, making it popular and showing the mainstream media just how incredible like these things really are. And it's not just people saying, oh, I think I feel better, I think it's this. It's actually there's things that are really happening inside the body. And that's what makes it so cool.
And that is what stuff you can measure. So my first studies, like in the early 2000s, were all about mood. I wanted to know how EFT, meditation, acupressure, these things affected our mood, what was our level of anxiety, what was the level of depression. And I eventually did a clinical trial, a pilot study with veterans with a small university medical school called Marshall University in West Virginia. And it took us about 2 or 3 years to finish this pilot study, only 7 veterans. So very, very, very small pilot study. But we found huge effects. I mean, we were just nailing PTSD in that small group. That led to a larger study of PTSD. And now there are many randomized controlled trials of EFT for PTSD. It also led me to starting a really powerful project getting EFT to veterans, because at that time the VA just was not interested at all in alternative therapies and still largely doesn't have much time for them. So I, with some coach and therapist friends, I started the Veteran Stress Project to actually bring these therapies to veterans with PTSD. But anyway, we have over half a dozen randomized controlled trials right now, and they showed that there were huge improvements in symptoms like flashbacks, nightmares, intrusive thoughts, and hypervigilance. So that was the first part of it. I did these studies. They became more and more complex. They became larger. I did one with 216 medical personnel, people, doctors, nurses, psychotherapists, chiropractors. And in that study, we gave them just one day of EFT, a one-day EFT training. And after that one-day training, their levels of those symptoms of anxiety and depression dropped by 45%. And I'd never seen anything like this. I mean, none of my colleagues studying this or collaborating with me had ever seen anything like a one-day treatment producing a 45% drop in anxiety and depression. So we initially were looking at mood, but what you're saying there is that mood isn't just the way you feel subjectively. When you have a good mood, your dopamine, your reward neurotransmitter is active. Your serotonin, which is your satisfaction neurotransmitter, is higher in your brain. So these various kinds of biochemical phenomena are happening. And I picked cortisol as my main field of study initially because I reasoned if our level of stress is going down, that means our bodies must be making less cortisol because our minds are signaling those genes differently. So I did a large triple-blind randomized controlled trial. Again, this isn't fringe science. This was published in the oldest peer-reviewed psychiatry journal in the U.S. Called the Journal of Nervous and Mental Disease. They published several of my studies. And so very old established journal, very traditional design, large-scale triple-blind randomized controlled trial. We found in that study that in 1 hour of EFT, comparing EFT to talk therapy, that people's levels of cortisol dropped. Their levels of anxiety and depression dropped more than half than the talk therapy group, and their levels of cortisol declined by 24% in just 1 hour. And the lab I used to analyze the samples, they couldn't even believe it. They said, this is impossible. We've never seen cortisol decline this much, this fast in 1 hour. But I looked at the biochemistry of that because what you call mood is objectively biochemical messengers shifting in your body. Your levels of serotonin and dopamine are changing. Your levels of oxytocin are changing, the bonding hormone. Your levels of DHEA, your main cell repair hormone, go up when your cortisol goes down because the same two precursors are used to make both DHEA and cortisol. So if you get stressed and you send that signal, that epigenetic signal to your cells to make lots of cortisol, they do, but they scavenge your DHEA, so they drop your level of DHEA. So like cancer patients, for instance, have high cortisol, and they tend to have about half the DHEA levels of non-stress, non-cancer patients. And so we're in this biological teeter-totter all the time, and stress severely depletes you. And so I began to look up these objective markers of well-being. And that's what's just so interesting to me now. I'm doing more and more research like this on gene expression, on little things called microRNAs, which are epigenetic markers. And it's really allowing us now to quantify the well-being people experience subjectively when they say that they feel better.
I want to dive into some of the stuff you talk about in your latest book too, Mind to Matter, and then more of the actual science behind a lot of what's going on and a lot of what you're witnessing and also proving. But I'm curious too about the EFT, because I've dabbled in EFT in the past. I actually kind of liked it, but didn't really get full into it. Like, I don't use it all the time. And I did like it, though. It did help a bit back when I was having anxiety and things like that. And I learned it just, I think, from watching like YouTube videos like over 10 years ago from Gary Craig. Did you study with him or some of the people that work with him?
Yep, I studied with him. And then he announced his retirement in 2009. And I then took over the archives of EFT and also the practitioner list of EFT. So when Gary announced his retirement in 2009, I then became, through my EFT Universe site, the repository of those stories and also of the practitioners. And then we kept on developing it. For example, we've been applying it with veterans a lot. We finally, after 10 years of effort, we finally were approved as a generally safe therapy by the VA. So now veterans can get EFT in the VA. And so I learned it, I developed it. And then with our trainer group, we have a group of trainers who trains people in EFT all over the world. And so we have a very stable and proven method, again, with over 100 clinical trials. And the amazing thing, too, is that EFT was developed in the 1970s, 1980s. The tapping therapies were developed by a clinical psychologist called Roger Callahan. And what's amazing to me is that he had such deep clinical wisdom that the method has remained virtually unchanged for 30 years. And whenever we put people in an MRI nowadays or an EEG or instruments they never even had around back then, we see that these acupressure-based techniques are incredibly effective. Acupuncture, these meridians, and studying them and using them for healing is over 5,000 years old. We have documented evidence of acupuncture and acupressure going back 5,000 years. And so we've known about these energy flows as human beings and used them for healing for a long, long, long time. But now they're at the level of development where I can go to a doctor, I can go to a nurse, I can talk to a hospital, I can go to the VA and say, this is evidence-based. We have the research here to show this stuff really works.
So in all your research and all your understanding and just knowledge of EFT and also acupressure, and I'm sure acupuncture as well, because it's along the same lines, what do you think is actually happening inside the body as far as the energy and the energy centers? How does that actually work to heal all sorts of different conditions?
What they have in common is stress. And so EFT works on many different things, on phobias like claustrophobia, works on anxiety and depression, works on PTSD, works on physical pain really well. It works on autoimmune diseases. The trials of autoimmune diseases like fibromyalgia and psoriasis shows EFT is effective. So it works on all these things because there's a common component that is stress. And when we put people in an MRI, we can see which brain regions are active. So for instance, a colleague of mine that I work with a lot in Australia, her name is Peter Stapleton, and she works at Bond University. And she designed a trial where she put women who were obese in an MRI and then showed them images of all of the foods they craved. So you just picture the kind of the setup over here. This woman is in an MRI. She may be 100 pounds or more overweight. She's then looking at images on a little screen of chocolate and cookies and pasta and pizza and fried foods and baked goods and all kinds of all the stuff she should not be eating, but she is because she has food cravings. And then Peter then put them through a series of EFT treatments and then put them back in the MRI. So the first round in the MRI, when they saw those images, their whole emotional brain lit way up. The limbic system, the center of the brain, which has emotion, all that part of the brain was fully active when they looked at those images. After EFT, that part of the brain was dark. They were no longer having an emotional reaction to those images. So that's what EFT does. EFT counter-conditions us. So we have a conditioned response to crave something, like food, or fear something like heights or small spaces. And so we have these conditioned cravings. EFT counterconditions these. You then see the results of that in the MRIs, with those parts of the brain being inactive. And what happens, the way it works is that when you remember either, say, a childhood wound, a childhood trauma, or an adult trauma, or something you crave or fear, those parts of the brain, and you then pair that experience with this second experience. So now you're putting side by side these two experiences. One is the feared or triggering, emotionally triggering impetus, the input that is stimulating you to feel those emotions. Then you tap as well. And you stimulate the energy system, you get the acupuncture meridians engaged, and that's pretty soothing. So now you're pairing this craving or this fear with the soothing signal. That breaks the association in the emotional brain between the stimulus and going into fight or flight. So before, I'll give you actually a cool example. I happen to be drinking some bottled water over here. I'm taking the last sip. You can't see me. Imagine scientist drinking bottled water. And there was a young man I worked with recently who served four tours of duty in Afghanistan. And now I'm taking the bottle, I'm crinkling it. Here's the sound. When that guy heard that sound, he would dive under the table. That's a strongly conditioned response. To him, it sounds like small arms fire, and he has a full-blown panic attack, and he's ducking for cover, okay? But that's a conditioned response. After EFT, you'd hear the plastic water bottle, and then his executive functioning in his brain to tell him, it's just a water bottle, it's not small arms fire. And so EFT makes that kind of a difference in people's lives. We've now treated over 20,000 veterans and family members and seen these huge shifts in their symptoms.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing too. Like you said, you basically have done the same thing for decades now and haven't really changed the core of how you do it. I've seen other things like pop up on YouTube and other websites here and there where they've changed it a little bit. They've changed the name, but it's basically all the same, and it's EFT, and they're all doing the exact same thing, which is tapping into those energy centers of the body and you know, changing around the chemistry of, like you said, releasing that cortisol instead of doing that, the stress hormone and other ones like it, adrenaline, you're releasing the good, feel-good hormones that are actually going to make you feel good, and you associate that with the different memories that you have. So I really think this can be applied to so many different areas of life. How often, you know, just for like a takeaway for the listeners, how often, if people do have trouble or they're facing some trauma or whatever stress, do you recommend that people do this like throughout the day, or should they spend a certain amount of time throughout the week trying to like figure out how to actually tap into this and really get it to work for them?
Yeah, and in my book, Mind to Matter, I recommend routines you use. And Mind to Matter contains 30 practices like this. So there are many others. There are things like yoga, qigong, Tai Chi, movement therapies. There are natural therapies like grounding, where you're barefoot on the earth, or where you take walks in nature. So there are many different kinds of evidence-based soothing techniques like this. But the two that I recommend are meditation and EFT. And the way I recommend people use them is I get up in the morning, I tap first thing. I just do a little bit of tapping first thing in the morning, and then I meditate for about 30 to 45 minutes or thereabouts. That's all you need. You don't need 5 hours of meditation. You can spend a long time meditating if you want. What's far more important is you meditate efficiently. And we measure, again that there's no consensus in science as to what meditation actually even is. But I define it in my books as a stable alpha brainwave state. And with experience, you can train yourself to enter that stable state. Now, most people that we look at, most meditators are inefficient. No kind of slur intended there, but it takes them, according to the research of Andrew Newberg, a famous neuroscientist, he says it takes them about 40 minutes to enter that stable state, the average person. And so if you're meditating for an hour, you're really only getting 20 minutes of meditation, because it's taking you 40 minutes to get there. With experience, you can get there in 20 minutes. But really, really experienced meditators, like who have 10,000 hours or more, they can get there in 1 minute. So you need to meditate. But you need to meditate efficiently to attain that stable alpha state quickly. So if you're spending, say, 20 minutes of meditation, if you can get there in 4 minutes or 5 minutes, you have then have 15 minutes in deep meditation. So that's the qualifier here. You need a a little bit of tapping in the morning and then enter that deep meditative state and do it quickly. And in my book, Mind to Matter, I tell you exactly how to do that and to know how you're doing that so you really get the most out of your meditation. Then you feel wonderful. All of these shifts happen in your body. You start to produce more DHEA. You start to have a surge of oxytocin, the bonding hormone. The parietal lobe of your brain starts really goes offline in deep meditation. That's the part of your brain that handles telling the rest of your brain where you end and the world begins. So that part of that proprioceptive part of the brain goes dark. You then feel as though you're one with everything. You have this powerful experience. You finish it, and then you move out into the world in this transformed way. But what then happens is that you get to work, and there's a crisis. There's an email waiting for you from a client that's unpleasant, or you get a phone call, or somebody says something mean to you, or you have some other kind of interpersonal conflict. So now what do? You're feeling great 2 hours before. Now you feel terrible after that interaction. That's when you tap. And tapping will bring you back to that state quickly. So tapping is this situational quick fix to get you back on track. Meditation is the longer-term baseline practice in the morning that gets you there in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I do have a couple of quick follow-ups for that. How do you know that you're in the deep state of meditation when you're actually meditating? Is there some type of characteristics or some different aspects that stick out that can tell you that you're kind of in the right state, or is it just like feeling like you're in the right state?
What is useful is to use some kind of feedback device initially to tell you what that state feels like. And there are lots of these around. There are some apps like from HeartMath that tell you if you're in heart coherence. There are wonderful products like there's another one called Coherence Coach that'll help you get into heart coherence. There are simple EEG home use appliances like the Muse. The Muse headband costs about $300, and it'll link to your smartphone, and it'll show you if you're in deep meditation or not. So it helps to use those to get there first. If you are just experimenting and trying, very few people succeed in hitting the target. They just don't know what to look for, and they have no idea how to get there quickly. But I have a little ritual, a little routine in Mind to Matter where I tell you how you can do this, and it's mechanical. So it doesn't require belief or training. It's just several cues in your body, and those cues are able to put you into that that heart coherent and deep alpha state. So once you know what you're aiming for, then you can go back quickly. But you need to spend some time initially figuring out what state you're trying to invoke. If you don't know that, you have no target available. You don't know whether you're meditating efficiently or not.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I love some of the resources you mentioned to check out. I'm going to check those out myself. One of the things I've had a problem with in the past while meditating is actually falling asleep while meditating, because I get so into that relaxed state that it just, you know, it's so easy to nod off. And that was actually another kind of follow-up question as well, is what are some of these people, these meditators that you mentioned, doing if they're spending, say, an hour meditating, but they're not actually hitting that state that they want to be in? What are they spending that hour of meditation doing? What states are they in, and what are they doing wrong, like, so it's not working?
Yeah, frequently their mind is wandering. That's the main distraction of meditation. Your mind starts to think about other things. But if you're meditating in a sufficient way, you don't fall asleep because your brain is releasing nitric oxide. So there are seven essential chemicals that are affecting your inner state when you're in that deep meditation. One is oxytocin. You have this oxytocin surge. So you feel one, and because you aren't feeling one with anything in particular, you're blending with non-local mind. And in the book, in Mind to Matter, in the very first beginning of the book, I talk a lot about non-local mind, and I go there at the end. And that's the act of letting go, surrendering your small local self, I, me, mine, who I think I am, letting go, surrendering into non-local mind. And that's powerful to do that. And oxytocin is one of the neurochemicals that does that. Then there's dopamine, the reward neurotransmitter, serotonin, the satisfaction neurotransmitter. There is, you secrete small amounts of norepinephrine that is also related to alertness, especially in the brain, and also nitric oxide, not nitrous oxide, laughing gas, nitric oxide. And nitric oxide makes your capillaries in your brain expand and gives you greater blood supply. So if you don't do all of these things to trigger this hormonal cocktail, two things that are triggered. One is beta endorphin. And between beta endorphin, of course, is your body's natural morphine. And it's really powerful. It's between 20 and 30 times stronger than synthetic morphine. So you start your meditation, you feel aches and pains, they go away after a while because beta endorphin kicks in. But then the pinnacle of meditative experience neurochemically is anandamide. And it was only discovered recently. It's called ananda, after the Sanskrit word for bliss. It's called the bliss molecule because you feel totally blissed out when you have surges of anandamide. It's also the same molecule that docks with the same locations in your brain as THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana. And so you're getting this high, but it's coming from within your own body endogenously, not from something you're smoking or ingesting exogenously. So you're getting this endogenous high from that THC-like molecule of anandamide. So now these six molecules are flooding your brain, driving you into this ecstatic state, and you're wide awake. You're just absolutely drinking it in. And this is powerfully transformative. Also, after a while, as you practice these states, they become traits. Like I give the example in chapter one of Mind to Matter of a TV journalist called Graham Phillips. And because he was a TV journalist and really inquisitive and wondering what meditation might do for him, he never meditated before, but he'd read some of the studies, he wanted to give it a try. So he took his whole TV crew into a university lab, and they did a whole workup on him before he began an 8-week meditation and mindfulness journey. And they measured his brain, like pixel by pixel inside his brain, what volume there was in each part of his brain. They measured his reaction time. They gave him a whole battery of psychological tests. And he then began his meditation journey. And with only 2 weeks in, he found he was less stressed, he was much less reactive, his professional life was improving, his personal relationships were much more tolerant and easygoing. But after 8 weeks, he went back into the lab and they measured his brain with a high-resolution MRI again. And in chapter one, I tell the story in more detail. But the punchline is that one part of his brain had grown enormously, and it's a network of neurons in the center of the brain called the dentate gyrus. And what its job is to coordinate emotional regulation across multiple brain regions. So if you have a good firing dentate gyrus, if you have a thick dentate gyrus, you can control yourself. So you aren't reactive, you are much less prone to be stressed. And in that 8-week period, his dentate gyrus grew by 22.8%. I mean, this is an explosion of neural tissue. So 22.8% growth in that key part of his brain, and it didn't take 10,000 hours, didn't take 10 years. It was only 8 weeks of consistent practice. So we are, by experiencing these states, by experiencing these neurochemicals, we are producing an explosion of the right kind of neural plasticity in our brains. Now, the downside here is that if you are stressed, for example, in veterans, PTSD, who are having flashbacks, having nightmares, the stress parts of their brain start to grow, like the amygdala, for example, which is the brain's fire alarm. Those parts start to grow and fire more efficiently, and the memory and learning parts start to shrink. So what happens in long-term meditators is exactly the opposite. The memory and learning parts, the happiness parts of the brain all light up, start to grow, and the amygdala literally begins to atrophy. So we are producing, with these states, we then are producing traits. Now, I'm not just a person who feels good. I am a person who habitually is creating the neural material for feeling good in my brain every day. And so now I have the trait of patience, I have the trait of happiness, I have the trait of compassion. I am a different person. So initially you try these techniques and you feel better. But in Mind to Matter, I explain how as this progresses over time, you eventually have a remodeled brain and you literally are better. You are these things. You're a highly resilient human being. So it's powerful to see those transient states becoming long-term traits.
Yeah, that really is incredible. So the dentate gyrus, I haven't heard of that actual term, but I just looked it up, and it looks like it is the same thing as the hippocampus, the memory part of your brain. Is that right?
It's inside the hippocampus.
Inside of it. Okay, inside of it. And did you actually say that there was a downside to this, to actually growing your hippocampus or growing different parts of your brain by meditating? Is there any type of downside? Is it all like just incredible things like it sounds like?
No, it's all upside meditation. The downside is if you have PTSD, have long-term depression or anxiety, you're then growing those parts of the brain. So we hear a lot about neuroplasticity, about how, you know, we grow, you learn a new language, learn a new sport, you're growing parts of the brain. But psychologically, when you have states, you're growing parts of the brain. And if those are depression and anger, there was a big debate in psychology in the 1970s. You know, is it healthy to express your anger, or is it healthy to suppress your anger? And now neuroscience pretty much comes down on the side of just let it go somehow. If you are expressing it over and over and over again, you're making those circuits stronger. So if you are using those circuits in your brain that are there to conduct the signals of fear or anxiety or anger, those parts become stronger. So neuroplasticity, the dark side is if you – that's why, for example, in one study I talk about in Mind to Matter, the researchers looked at 5,300 first responders after 9/11, and some had PTSD, were diagnosed with PTSD soon after the event, others weren't. But they found that over the next 2 to 5 years, the number of those diagnosed with PTSD doubled, because now, after your brain's been firing with those flashbacks and nightmares, it begins to wire with those negative events. And now PTSD is showing up in your brain years or even decades after the event. So the dark side of neuroplasticity is if you're expressing anger or guilt or shame or resentment or negative emotions, you're strengthening those circuits. If you're expressing compassion and love and kindness and creativity, you're strengthening those circuits. And so either way, neuroplasticity is happening. You are remodeling your brain literally with every thought you have, every strong emotion you have. And so the difference is, do you meditate? Do you center yourself? Do you put this process to work for your advantage, or are you just pushed around by the external world, your own emotions, and remodeling your brain to be more of the same?
Today's episode is sponsored by my friends over at Simple Habit, the creators of one of the coolest and most effective meditation apps I've ever used. You guys know I love meditation. I talk about it on the podcast all the time. I bring on guests who share different meditation practices, and I've used and tried so many different meditations myself. Every day, in fact, I meditate because, well, I just love it that much. I've tried dozens and dozens of apps, MP3s, and different programs in the past, but I've got to say, Simple Habit is right at the top of the list for favorite ways to meditate. Simple Habit has hundreds of meditations available for free and thousands with their premium subscription. And there's over 100 plus experts on these meditations, so you don't get tired or bored with hearing the same voice over and over again. And one of the things I love most about Simple Habit is that they have specific meditations for specific problems, such as getting over stress, focusing better, helping you go to sleep, kickstarting your morning, and so much more. It's not like so many other meditations that can quite frankly get old and tiresome really fast. Simple Habit has so many different things to do and keeps you very engaged and wanting to do more. Not to mention, they also have cool walking meditations, commuting meditations, work meditations, and even meditations for when you have to do the dishes. And did I mention many of these meditations are short and to the point, taking up only about 5 minutes of your time? Yep, Simple Habit is truly a game changer in the meditation space. For 30% off their premium subscription, go to simplehabit.com/elite right now and get started. But make sure you go right now, as this offer will be gone soon and is limited to the first 50 Elite Man listeners who act fast. That's simplehabit.com/elite. I want to ask you about your specific meditations in a moment, but I do want to first ask about the importance of heart coherence, because I've heard this term many times over the last few months, especially doing some research and different meditations and things like that. What is heart coherence exactly, and what is the importance of it when getting into meditation?
Heart coherence is a regular interval between heartbeats. And when people are in highly coherent states, you can see it on a monitor or also on a brainwave monitor. And one of the things I looked at in Mind to Matter, and it really has just intrigued me over the years, is that I've known people, Justin, who are fabulous manifestors. You mentioned like Joe Dispenza. Joe is just a manifester. He wants something, he has a goal, he hits that gold. Joe Dispenza is a real star manifester. People like Jack Canfield, Tony Robbins, these people, they set goals, they meet them. Then I have known other people, other friends who are much less fortunate, and they would have these great dreams of what they wanted in their love life or for money or career or spiritual practice, and the stuff never happens. And so it's not intention that's making the difference, because the Tony Robbinses of this world are intending, but the people who are intending and nothing happens, they're intending as well. So what makes the difference? And I tackle that problem in the book, and I try to explain scientifically what we find. And what we find is that people who are intenders and manifestors and are successful at that, they have highly coherent brainwaves. And in the book, I have an EEG of a person with highly coherent brainwaves next to an image of a person with non-coherent brainwaves. And you can see the difference at a glance. The non-coherent people are all over the place. The coherent people, their brains are functioning in synchrony. There's a thing called gamma synchrony that we measure. It's both left and right hemisphere. It's front and back of the brain. And in gamma, we synchronize information from many different parts of the brain, and we integrate all of those inputs. And so in long-term meditators, for example, they have up to 700% more gamma synchrony than untrained people or novices. And so these people with these efficient brains are great manifestors. They want things, and just synchronistically, those things unfold. The people who have intentions but aren't able to manifest, they don't have coherent brainwaves, they don't have coherent minds. And so one of the big things I'm doing now is I'm training people. I do a lot of live workshops. I do a lot of online courses. I want to train people to actually acquire these coherent states, because they're not hard. You have to know what to do, but with the aid of good neurofeedback and an accurate roadmap, you can actually learn those kinds of practices. So in a lab or in a live workshop, we'll literally hook people up and we'll train them to hit that target. Once they learn to hit it a few times, they know what it feels like, then they can do it by themselves at home. So it's really important to learn the skills of intention and manifestation, because when you are in heart coherence, you're in brain coherence, then those pull the rest of your body into coherence. Even your digestive tract, the movement, the peristalsis, the movement of food through your esophagus, all of that becomes coherent together. Then in NLP terms, you're congruent. All your mind, your body, your intentions, all the parts of your body will congruent together in that coherent state. Then you have intentions, then things happen.
Is this really the key to the law of attraction, or the secret to the secret of why it actually works? When you have these things all lined up, then the good things start to come into your life. And the people who don't have, like you said before, they have the greatest intentions in the world and they work hard and they do all the right things, it seems, but they're just not clicking on all cylinders throughout the body, is, you know, obviously in the mind and everything. Is that really what the missing piece?
That's exactly what the missing piece is. And they don't know why they aren't successful, but they aren't. In one experiment done by HeartMath, my friend, my collaborators who really study heart coherence, they have people intend that DNA change. And you can actually measure the degree of twist in the double helix with advanced imaging equipment. So what they did in this study was they had flasks of DNA, and they had people have the intention of making that twist tighter, because you can measure that degree of twist. And so they had people sit in a room, DNA flask in front of them, and they said, okay, we want you to make that DNA twist tighter. Nothing happened. They then had people who were trained in meditation sit there and have the same intention. Nothing happened. But then those meditators went into heart coherence. And in heart coherence, when they then had the intention that those DNA strands twist tighter in that flask, they did twist tighter. They then said to these heart coherent people, okay, let's do another trial. We want you now to make the DNA loosen up in this flask. And sure enough, in a coherent state, they could do that. In a non-coherent state, they could not. They then gave them a third task. They said, okay, enter heart coherence. Here are three flasks. We want you to twist the DNA tighter in the middle flask, but leave the flask to the left and the right untouched. And sure enough, in a heart coherent state, that's exactly what they did. So these are powerful states. They affect matter. That's why the book is called Mind to Matter. It's not mind over matter. We're just in collaboration with non-local mind. And in that deep heart coherent space, we can affect the molecules of the world around us.
Just real quickly, do you need to have high technology and do you need to go to one of these workshops to get into heart coherence or to learn how to the practice of really getting into it so you know that you're in it? Or is there another like simpler way for people listening right now to actually get into that state before they meditate or while they're meditating?
Yeah, there are lots of ways. So, for example, in the book, I have something called extended play resources and deepening practices at the end of each chapter. So chapter one has them all the way through the book. And what you can do is go there. And in those free deepening practices, there are ways of getting into these states, which I recommend you practice and try. So there are free resources on there. There's also a lot of action, a lot of people using my meditations on the world's biggest meditation app, which is called Insight Timer. And so Insight Timer has a bunch of meditations, and just search for my name on Insight Timer. They're only about 15 minutes long, they're short, but they put you in that state automatically, just involuntarily. They have various scientific triggers that put you in that state. So the book has these, Insight Timer has these, they're free on the web. And then if you want to really get into a deep state, it's worth checking out either an online course or a class. So there are lots of ways of engaging with this material. The only thing you want to not do is nothing. Because if you just keep on, unless people actually start meditating, start tapping in some way, shape, or form, nothing much will happen. So you have to find a scientifically reputable source of it and then follow those instructions, feel the differences in your body, and then persist. Just keep on doing it for a while and you'll see things start to change in your life.
Okay, cool. Dawson, what does your actual meditation look like? We talked about the heart coherence and, some of the tapping things that you do, but what is the actual meditation itself look like when you're meditating for, say, 45 minutes or so? What are you actually thinking of? What's the beginning look like so you get into that state? And then what are you actually thinking of, or how is your mind processing and functioning during that time?
When I was first at the spiritual community and learning to meditate, the meditation teacher said, meditation is so easy. All you do is close your eyes, sit quietly, and still your mind. Now, that didn't work for me at all. I've never been able to still my mind, so I was always an intermittent and unsuccessful meditator up till a few years back, and just I couldn't do that. So I had to find a meditation method that didn't require stilling your mind. Now, I was intrigued when I learned HeartMath and went through their training that you can use technology to get you there, but you can also get yourself there through a certain breathing rhythm. So in the meditation I have on the web, I put people in that breathing rhythm, which automatically puts you into heart coherence. Then there is a visualization that'll put you into deep heart coherence. Then there's a third visualization that will put you into a state in which research suggests you're producing very quick neuroplasticity activation in your brain. So you're doing these things, and they're not like hard to do. They're just breathing a certain way, having certain images in mind, and then relaxing certain muscles. There's certain muscles which, if you relax your whole body. And this has been shown in neurofeedback and biofeedback research. We also use tapping to start with and mindfulness. So we're combining all of these things in a simple 7-step routine. And the method itself is called ECO meditation, ECO meditation. It's free. It's all over the web. People are using it. Lots of different people. I mean, I meet people all over the place who say, I don't even know you, and I heard about your meditation. I'm a veteran. Just searching the web, I found it. So it's just exploding spontaneously. We're getting we're getting like 300,000 hits a year now on that website, Eco Meditation. It's just a page, really, on a bigger site. But it struck a nerve because it's so easy, and you just do it, and the very first time, usually, you feel good. Like this woman called Tony who emailed us a few months ago, who said, and we put a quote on the website. She said, I'm a mom. I'm overwhelmed. My brain is so full of negative thoughts. I'm in high stress 99% of the time. And when I sat down to do your eco meditation, my mind just said to me, Tony, you're wasting your time. You will fail at this like you failed at everything else. This won't work for you. But I sat down and I did the 7 steps. And suddenly, when I got to step 3, my heart cracked open. My brain was full of bliss. Tears of love ran down my cheeks. And I was at the space I'd wanted to be at all this time. So we've gotten many, many testimonials like this from people who are trying it. And it's just, it's so easy. It's mechanical, but it's all evidence-based. So that's why we know it works. Not just a good guess. It's all stuff that science has shown really works. When you combine all those things, it puts you in that altered state.
Yeah. So what is that? I mean, that sounds absolutely incredible. I want to check that out myself. What is the resource for that or the link? Because I want to actually go through that and see what my experience is with that, because I'd like to share the feedback on that with my audience, you know, at a later date.
Yeah, please do. It's just ecomeditation.com, ecomeditation.com.
So if people don't have this resource, they don't have the step-by-step walkthrough that you're giving them, what do you recommend that they actually do to get into this type of meditation that's going to be successful? Like we talked about earlier too, with the law of attraction, and you know, you read books like The Secret and how that works. You know, the feeling the things that you want as if you have them now. Are you doing those types of things in your meditations, or do you recommend, you know, anybody do those types of things when they're actually trying to meditate? Are they going through that process of experiencing and feeling all those emotions of already having those types of things that they want? Or is it something completely different?
You know, paradoxically, I don't recommend that. Not that there's no value in doing that, there is. But what we're doing, Justin, is we're tending to recreate our lives out of local mind. I am a local person, and I'll just do a 10-second experiment now for everybody. Okay, so if you just, right now, wherever you are, if you can do this safely, if you aren't driving, just cross your arms. Just cross your arms one over the other. Now, cross your arms the other way. And you will find it's quite hard to cross your arms the other way, the way you don't usually do it, because you are conditioned to do it one way. You're conditioned to brush your teeth on one side first and put on one sock first. And you do the same thing every day. So a huge chunk of our functioning is on autopilot like that. And so we tend to repeat our conditioning. And it's hard to break free of that conditioning. And so people want to visualize, they want to create things, but they're creating out of the level of their local mind. It's who I think I am. It's where I went to university or school. It's what clothes I'm wearing. It's whether I'm married or single and what kids I have or what job I have. So they have all of these conditioned stories about themselves. And when you create out of that limited conditioned self, you create more of the same. What the trick is to blend with non-local mind. And in, like for example, my wife and I teach a 7-day retreat. At the end of each year, we take about 40 or 50 people away to a secluded, beautiful resort. We hook them up to EEGs. We train them in these brain states. We expose them to shamanic wisdom with a spiritual master. We do all these practices designed to let them let go of that limited local self. When you then let go of the self you've known and you blend with non-local mind, now you're one with a force that creates the seasons and the migration of the birds and the rotation of the planets. You're one with non-local mind. What you want to do is, the reason we do this retreat at the end of each year over New Year's is because you want to create your year and your day and your moment. Everything you create, you want to do it blended with non-local mind and downloading the wisdom of non-local mind. There is a great self there which has much infinitely greater ideas of your potential than your limited local mind has. And so what we encourage people to do is actually not do the kind of goal setting that you hear about on The Secret or The Law of Attraction at that level of local mind, because you'll just build and create either what you want or the antithesis of what you don't want. You want to instead blend with that. What happens then is you're one with synchronicity, you're one with flow, you're in this very deep flow state, not just personally, but with all of nature. And at the end of Mind to Matter, I have some incredible research I share of solar cycles and cosmic level events. And now we can measure these. There are these giant magnetometers in different parts of the Earth's surface where we measure things like the solar wind, solar flares. And so at the end of the book, I have this remarkable experiment I describe where these researchers looked at these solar cycles for a 30-day period. So 1 month of solar cycles. This is nature writ large. This is nature at a very large scale of the solar system. And then I overlaid that with the heart rate variability graph of one person who is in this deep state and who's habitually in that state. And the two of them totally line up, the peaks, the valleys, the ups and downs. If you look at that graph in the book, it's stunning. And we see that this person is literally aligned with solar system level events going on. So these people suddenly are then aware of synchronicities. They're aware of distant healing effects. They're aware of things as they happen. They're in the moment, they're present, they're now. And so that's the kind of oneness with nature, with flow, with non-local mind that I am encouraging people to adopt, not creating out of your local mind, which is limited to your past and your experience. It's letting go of that clinging to that small local self and seeing yourself as non-local mind sees you, which is whole, perfect, complete, full of potential. You then create from the potential, and I can tell you, Justin, who you are and what you create from that standpoint is a whole different thing from what you would have created in that state of local mind.
This is pretty deep and, you know, even more fascinating stuff if we can get it even more intense than what we've been talking about. But do you believe in some of those things like that Dispenza talks about in some of his books of going like out of basically like going into another dimension? I think he talks about like almost like you can see yourself as if like he talks about in different experiences of him seeing his own body like floating out of body and, you know, as being more of like a spirit as opposed to an actual person. And it's like the supernatural, like his book is becoming supernatural. He talks about a lot of supernatural things. Do you believe in those types of things as well? And if so, what are some of the incredible things that you've seen or experienced yourself in that regard?
When we are in those states, those extraordinary states, we do let go of our identification with the body. And mystics have described this for millennia. In the mystical experience, they blend in this unity experience. And the cool thing about mysticism and that unity state is that it's not religious. It's not like Buddhists have it only and Hindus don't, or Jews have it and Muslims don't. So if you look at the Sufi mystics like Rumi or Hafiz, if you look at St. John of the Cross, if you look at Hildegard of Bingen, in the Christian tradition, if you look at some of the Kabbalistic Jewish writers, they're all describing the same thing. So religions are very different, but the mystical experience is one, and it involves letting go, loosening that anchoring in the local self and becoming one with non-local mind. So yeah, your experience does drift off above your local body and into that non-local self. And so you're seeing yourself from that perspective. And that there is so much love for you in that space. You feel the love of the universe pouring through you when you're in that space, and the gratitude and awe, just it's awesome in the true sense of the word, awe, A-W-E. I mean, you just feel absolutely remarkable. And when you make a habit of this, you then start your day in this elevated state. Again, your life is on a whole different trajectory than if you just stay stuck in your local self. So another cool thing is that people who have these experiences, who meditate regularly, report much higher levels of things like distant healing, like precognition, knowing what will happen in the future before it happens, and all of these other kinds of states, clairvoyance, telepathy, they all go along, those mystical experiences all go along together as a whole. So what tends to happen is that as we are in these elevated states of meditation, we have much higher levels of these kinds of anomalous experiences happening in our lives. And our lives flow much, much more smoothly when they're in the synchronous flow of nature than if we're in local self trying to make our best way through the world.
So have you had, Dawson, any incredible experiences like that or to that effect, like where you were just totally blown away? And if you told somebody else, like scientifically, they'd just think you were crazy. Have you experienced anything like that you can share with us or no?
Oh, other scientists think I'm very, very rational because I show them the EEGs and the MRIs. It's like, oh, well, there we see the pattern. In mind to matter, I call it the awakened mind state. And it's, you know, that's the cool thing about science is when we read the poetry of Rumi, it's like this mystical experience that he had. But when I have someone hooked up to an EEG and that person's having that experience, I can quantify their brain waves. In fact, if you show me an EEG in a certain kind of readout pattern, I'll tell you, without knowing the age, the mental state, the gender of that person, I can tell you exactly what's going on in their consciousness purely by their brain waves and what's happening in their brains. So absolutely, science now allows us to quantify these, and I pretty much invoke that space every day. I wouldn't want to start a day without that kind of connection and not be in flow. Once you've had this experience of ecstasy, you just, I mean, all of that anandamide in your brain, the bliss molecule, the serotonin and dopamine, the oxytocin, all of these things are the neurochemicals of bliss. And once you've tasted that, and then you can induce that on a regular basis, there's nowhere else you'd rather be.
Wow, that is awesome. What are some of the biggest things that are most incredible things that you've witnessed with this, like as far as, say, reversing medical conditions, diseases, those types of things? Have you seen anything or experienced anything personally from a friend or family where when they started doing this type of thing, they just did something incredible that, you know, most scientists would say is impossible or they haven't actually found like a cure for yet?
Yeah, there are lots of stories like that in Mind to Matter, and I'll tell you one which affected me personally. I had a friend called Beth who called me in a panic in, I just want to get all my facts straight over here, in March of 2017, and she'd just been diagnosed with breast cancer, and she was being treated at the MD Anderson Cancer Clinic in Houston, one of the most prestigious institutions for cancer treatment in the world. And they had found a tumor on her right breast, which they measured at 5 centimeters across, about 2 inches across. And they then looked for involvement in other parts of her body. And they discovered that all the lymph nodes under her right armpit were swollen and full of cancer cells. They also found 3 spots of inflammation on her right lung. So it looked as though the cancer was spreading beyond the primary tumor, was in her lymph system, and had metastasized to at least her lung and maybe elsewhere as well. So this is a very poor prognosis. This a person with a diagnosis like this has limited time left usually. And the oncologist, in fact, when she gave her the diagnosis that day, said, Beth, you know, I want you to go straight to radiation right now. Normally, we would schedule your first treatment next week, but this is so serious. I want you to go straight from my office to radiotherapy. We'll squeeze you in right this very, very, very moment. But Beth said, I want time to think, and she stepped back, and she did. And she wound up not getting conventional treatment. She said, I'm a being of energy. And of course, in Mind to Matter, I talk all the way through the book about how we are beings of energy, and we can use energy, and that affects matter dramatically. And so Beth changed her energy drastically. She turned off all her alerts on her cell phone. She quit responding to outside negativity. She quit listening to the news. She got rid of people and events and activities in her life that brought her down. She changed her diet. She exercised more. She began to do Qigong. She emailed me and called me one week in a panic because she said, I've had a gene test, and they found I have 8 defective genes, some of which predispose me to breast cancer. And I said, Beth, you have 24,000 genes in each cell. That means that this is such good news. It means that 29,992 of them are just fine. So we did some surrogate EFT with her. We did some surrogate tapping. She tapped. She meditated. She did everything right. She just changed her energy. So just picture the scene. She gets the diagnosis in March. In May, she went back to MD Anderson. The tumor had shrunk from 5 centimeters to 1.4 centimeters. So this is like a little over half an inch. All the lymph nodes under her right armpit were completely clear and normal. All the cancer in there was gone. And she then got blood tests a little bit later and not a trace of cancer in her body. Mind to Matter, our minds can heal powerfully. There are a lot of stories like this in the book. Animal trials of consciousness and energy changing things like terminal cancer. A lot of stories of people changing their money, changing their love lives, changing their spiritual lives. And when they change their energy, their bodies respond. So this really is the way to live. As beings of energy in bodies of flesh, as we shift our consciousness and energy, those bodies change, and not just a little bit. I mean, change remarkably as we do this. We both remodel our brains and then trigger all kinds of there's a whole chapter on all of the beneficial changes in our bodies. We have increased stem cell production, increased telomere length. All of these things are being triggered by consciousness alone. So it's powerful to deliberately take control of this body and brain remodeling process, use these tools, and then reap the health and longevity benefits of that, as well as just feeling good every day.
I'm just curious, have you ever done any hypnosis or self-hypnosis?
There are elements of EFT and eco meditation that are hypnotic, and I've had sessions with people. Yeah, and I've really found it. It's cool. So there are little rituals that are hypnotic in those two practices. And I think it's, all of those tools are useful.
Yeah, I was just wondering too. Like, there is so much crossover in between all this, you know, a lot of these teachings. And but yeah, I'm just wondering too, like, if you can actually figure out exactly how to say, like, cure cancer or a tumor or Parkinson's, whatever, like, if you know scientifically what would fix the part of your brain that's damaged, how you can write that down into, like, a hypnotic script and then actually program your subconscious mind to change it for you. I don't think they've ever really done things like that in hypnosis, and I don't think people actually really know exactly how to, you know, cure different types of things yet, like, specifically, like, training the brain to do it, but I mentioned that way back when on another podcast when I had a hypnotist on, and because I've always been very fond of self-hypnosis. It's just something that I think would be incredible, like, if they studied that a little bit more.
Yeah, well, I think that the reason I have 30 different practices in mind to matter is that there's no one-size-fits-all. So for some people, yoga is the thing. Other people, it's Qigong. Others, it's time in nature. Some is grounding. Some is EFT. And what I recommend people do is that they play around with these tools and pick ones that work for their lifestyle. So for some people, they just love, like my wife loves yoga, but I like Qigong more than yoga, and she likes yoga more than Qigong. So it's more a matter of using one that's right for your lifestyle and that you'll actually do. So there's some people will gravitate toward hypnosis, others toward NLP, some toward energy therapy, some toward EMDR. And it's just a matter of using whatever tool really fits for your lifestyle and you personally feel the most benefit from. Also, we're moving toward an area, and this is a whole other hour-long show, but I've written a lot about personalized epigenetics, and this is a whole different topic, but we now can do gene tests that allow us to determine exactly which of these practices is right for your genome, and that's just mind-blowing stuff. So we're moving toward the point where we can actually prescribe these things based on your gene profile.
Yeah, and this is, you know, obviously another topic to another show, but what do you think of things like, because I asked this to Dr. Bruce Lipton too when he was on the show, of people actually growing taller or growing their hair back once they lose their hair and become bald. Are these things possible if you don't actually have those types of genes, say, that would, you know, make you predisposed to be 6 foot tall and you're 5 foot six? Can you actually change the expression of things like that, where you can actually literally change, like you said in the title of the book, material reality, like your material reality, if you don't, like, it's never been done before, but are those types of things potentially possible?
You know, I don't go there. What I go to is far more in the direction of psychological well-being, yeah, rather than physical changes. Like, why be an inch shorter or an inch taller? Why have more hair or less hair? But I mean, that just, I can't see that really being much one way or the other. But being, like, in one study we did at Esalen, we had people there for a week doing meditation, EFT. After that, their cortisol, after a week, their baseline of cortisol in their bodies went down by 37%. I mean, that's a huge drop in stress. Their baseline for immunoglobulins went up by 113%, and their happiness went up by 31%. I mean, those to me are far more important than how tall you are or what color your hair is or whether you have it or not. So it's those kinds of changes that I think give you a beautiful body to live in. And, you know, we'll all grow old and die. At some point, our bodies will wear out. None of us are going to be immortal. And so the trick is to be happy in whatever body you are, whatever age you are, whatever gender you are. Just be completely at inner peace and react everything within a peace that you possibly can all the way through your life. That's far more important than those externals.
It totally is. I mean, you're basically getting to the root of the other stuff. Like, that's all surface level stuff, 100%. But at the same time, it would be pretty cool if you could do those things. And personally, I don't know, just I have a feeling that this isn't just limited to things like emotions and feelings. I actually think, for some reason, that type of stuff is possible, especially when we talk about, like, involving some technology and things like that into the equation. I don't know. I think the future could hold different things like that and make it a reality. But that's just my guess. And of course, you know, at the end of the day, too, that is, like I said, superficial. And the other stuff, like you said, is much more important.
Yeah, and actually, I'm writing a new book now, which does talk about where all this takes us in the future. And it's a lot of it's counterintuitive, and a lot of it is absolutely mind-blowing. So Mind to Matter is all about using this in your own life. And then the next book will be about how this is changing global culture. So it's having huge effects on the way we are as human beings.
Nice. Dawson, thanks again for coming on, man. It's been a fantastic interview, and I know our guys are going to love this one. What's a final send-off takeaway message for the Elite Man audience and also a place our listeners can check out your book?
The final takeaway is just love and accept yourself just the way you are. Our inner self-talk, inner criticism is such an obstacle to that self-love. And so just all the way through the research I've done, all the way through my book, Mind to Matter, that message is just love yourself the way you are. And take the time to blend with that non-local reality and be the version of you that that non-local reality has in mind, which is happy and healthy and blessed. And for more, you can find all those 30 practices as well as free meditations, free download of the EFT Tapping Acupressure Mini Manual. All of that is at mindtomatter.com. I also teach many retreats every year, many live workshops. I'm doing a big one in at the end of every year to prepare us for the next year, the Life Vision Retreat. And so there are lots of ways of getting in touch and doing the work. So find the one that works for you and practice those techniques because they can make the world of difference, both for your health, your longevity, and the kind of life you enjoy. So do it. That's the main thing. Do it.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to check out those meditations myself, and especially that heart coherence and ecomeditation.com. And thanks again, man, for coming on. Really appreciate it. And take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
It's been a joy. Thanks again so much.
Hey, are you following me on Instagram yet? If not, you are completely psychotic, but you do have a chance to redeem yourself. Go to Instagram right now and follow at Justin Stenstrom. That's JustinStenstrom. That's right. That's my first and last name. And when you follow me, you'll get day-to-day updates on book recommendations, biohacking tools, elite man know-how, and all the glorious content I probably shouldn't post about, but do anyways. Whether pics of me trying to conquer the world in my personal life or stories about cutting-edge research and technology, I post all the time on Instagram. It's one of my favorite platforms, so you have to be following me to keep up to date on Elite Man Know-How. Get your daily dose of Elite Man entertainment and information Sunday through Saturday, Instagram at Justin Stenstrom. Also, you can always click the link in the show notes, which will take you to this link and all other links that we mention here on the Elite Man podcast. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.